This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to Roundtable Talks on RNIB Connect Radio, where we bring together panellists from different walks of life to discuss big ideas. Today, we will be discussing confidence. Confidence is important for boosting our self-esteem and helping us pursue and achieve our goals. But building and maintaining confidence can be uniquely challenging for blind and partially sighted people. Physical and attitudinal barriers can make it difficult to pursue confidence-building activities, like sports, independent travel, performing, and more. Experiencing a change in vision can also add difficulties to everyday tasks and challenge your sense of self. Alongside that, lack of representation of confident, blind, and partially sighted people can also make it hard to feel proud of your achievements and comfortable taking up space. We're joined today by four blind and partially sighted people who have tried various different activities to build their confidence. Our first panellist is Berenice Magistretti. She's a writer and disability advocate based in Milan. She was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa 20 years ago and has been experiencing gradual sight loss since. 2 years ago, she started using a cane, which completely shifted her outlook on life with a disability, and began her journey to share her experiences and start new conversations through fashion, beauty, art, and design. Hi, Berenice. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Amelia. Thank you so much for having me.
Our second panellist is Aliza Remen. She's an English and creative writing student at Brunel University, London. She's had Leber's congenital amaurosis since birth and had some peripheral vision until 16, and now only some light perception remains in her left eye due to keratoconus in her right eye. She features on RNIB Connect Radio with book and film reviews, fashion discussions, and her volunteering work with sight loss organisations. Hi, Aliza. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, no worries.
Our third panellist is Sean Hayward. He is from Manchester and began dancing in 2010. After experiencing an injury, he took a break but got back on the dance floor in 2022 and was the first blind person to ever qualify to compete at the Winter Gardens in Blackpool. He has retinitis pigmentosa and Charles Bonnet syndrome and is a big advocate for blind and partially sighted people to get dancing. And he acted as our Strictly consultant last year. Hi, Sean. Thanks so much for joining us.
No, great to be here.
And our fourth and final panellist will be a familiar voice. David Hogg is a content producer here at RNIB Connect Radio and presents the Afternoon Edition and A Little Alternative. He's been registered blind since birth and has recently been getting into the gym to boost his strength and confidence. Thanks for joining us, David.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get started with you, Sean. And I think I may know the answer to this one, but what activity makes you feel most confident?
Dancing 100%. I mean, obviously, there's lots of different forms of dancing, from salsa, modern jive, tap, ballroom and Latin, which I've been doing for the past 2 years. Unfortunately, I've had to have a year off, but I'm just going to get back to it. And what it is, especially about ballroom and Latin, it is particularly difficult. But because of that, the timing that you're learning, the balance you're learning, the contact with others, the fitness element, I say, the stuff that it gives you mentally, second to none. I've done a lot of different gym work, sport work, martial arts, all that stuff, but dancing, it truly is a combination of fitness and empathy and, yeah, so many things.
How about you, Aliza?
It's honestly a really hard one, but I think writing, speaking, work that I've done, it just gives me satisfaction to know that I'm helping others through my experience, and I honestly don't feel shy about it, which I think is something that a lot of people with blind or partial sight kind of struggle with, being ashamed of who they are or are reluctant to ask for that support. And I just find confidence in saying, hey, it's okay. You know, we all struggle, but, you know, we'll get there in the end.
I have to agree with both Sean and Aliza. Two activities that really make me feel confident. One is also dancing. I mean, I'm not at all a professional dancer or anything, but I absolutely love going out and dancing. Or if there's a house party, I'll be the first one to, you know, shake my booty. And especially to, you know, music, like fun music like ABBA or like old school tunes. And the second one, yeah, is writing and speaking about my disability and my vision impairment. It's something that has really helped me, you know, overcome some of the challenges and hurdles, and just helps me make sense of my disability. And just, you know, the fact of being vocal and visible about it have really boosted my confidence. I see also the connection that it can create with others, and that hopefully it inspires or helps other people to also be more vocal and visible about their disability. So yeah, I'd say these two activities.
Similar to Sean, but like the complete opposite side of it. Like I'm not a mover or a shaker at all, but taking the gym a bit more seriously is something that I've gotten into a bit more in the past, say, year or so. And before that, you know, tried various team sports, and just whether it was due to my eyes or, you know, also not being very naturally good at it, that kind of didn't go particularly well. So I think finding something that I can do pretty much entirely solitary and, you know, still keep myself fit and healthy is pretty good for the old confidence.
Aliza, you mentioned that many visually impaired people can feel a sense of shame in taking up space. How did you prevent that developing for yourself or overcome it?
I would say that one of the things, like growing up, I was taught to use a cane, you know, like most children with vision impairment who haven't got the best sight. And when I used to walk around school or towards school, particularly in secondary school, I never used a cane because I was like, I can see, I don't need this thing. It's getting in my way. And that was a similar approach with sort of using screen readers as well. So I don't need this thing. I can see, I can rely on Siri to do everything. But I guess when I lost my vision at 16, or when it deteriorated a bit more, I came to the realization that yes, I need these things. And you know, now I'm kind of proud of it rather than saying that, oh yeah, I'm going to let my pride get in the way of it.
I think that's just a great thing you said about being proud of it. That's just a great place to be.
Yeah, I think for me, the shame factor, because I, until 2 years ago, was living with, you know, an invisible disability. So, you know, it was the perfect way for me to hide it because I was ashamed of it. And I think that, you know, in my early 30s, I hit a point where it just became exhausting to hide it. And I was spending so much energy trying to hide it rather than actually managing the disability that, you know, I hit a point where I'm like, I need to talk about it and I need to share it. So the first big step for me was being vocal about it. And being a journalist, it came very naturally for me to write about it. And, you know, just the feedback and the returns that I got was incredible. Well, where so many people, you know, shared their own journeys and saying, well, you know, not a lot of people know this, but I'm actually partially deaf. You know, no one really knows that I have this neurological disease that impacts the way my legs move. So I discovered this whole world of invisible disabilities. And so that was the big first step for me. And then the second big step was, you know, transitioning to a visible disability by starting to use a cane. That was incredibly difficult because of the stigma that's attached to the cane. But in some way, you know, I managed to feel so liberated once I started using the cane. But the big thing for me was also making my own cane, because fashion is very important to me. And so that was one way for me to express, you know, my confidence and sense of style by designing my own cane that represents me as a whole rather than just my disability. So I think the cane can be incredibly powerful if you make it your own.
Yeah, that changing time, going from partial sight to first using a symbol cane to using a guide cane, then to a long cane. That's how it worked for me, because it was progressive in my 20s. Because you're just finding who you are, aren't you? You know, and it's really difficult at those ages. And you don't want to be seen as that, you know, singled out as that disabled, blind person, whatever. And it is a big thing to stick out in front of you. And, you know, people describe it as the parting of the waves when you're rocking down the street left and right with it. And everyone's just like, whoa, there it goes. But I was very lucky in that I went out for a night out with my two sisters many years ago. They knew my sight wasn't great and I need to use the cane, and they'd set it up. So we were in different bars and we were on the way to a club, and they passed me a cane and they just went off. I was like, what? You know, it's like, right, you've got to do it. You've got to do it. And it was from that night that it started for me. So I feel very lucky to have had the family I've got. Because, you know, let's face it, blindness is scary. The psychological impact of losing someone's face and maybe seeing their hair, and then that deteriorates to another level, and sometimes you don't notice it until you visit someone you've not seen for 6 months in their house. You go, oh my God, it really has deteriorated. So there's massive, massive parts of anxiety. And you do have to face your fears. Otherwise, you do end up trapped in the house. And, you know, and if that suits your lifestyle, if people, you know, are okay with just wanting to sit here and watch Netflix and stuff, and that's their choice, absolutely. But I think for many here today and many others, you want to be, you know, you're a blind person in a sighted world and you want to engage with that world.
I'd love to add on about the mobility factor there as well. When I was going through my vision deterioration, it was during lockdown. So I was in sixth form at the time. And even though I knew my environment, you know, I used my sight a lot because I could see shadows of things, of furniture and stuff like that. And there was no sighted guide. That wasn't even allowed either. So it can be really overwhelming of using your cane with vision and then with using your cane without vision. You know, you've got to use it, as I like to say, in that more tactile way, you know, remembering how to walk in step, how to really find those landmarks and tapping and scanning and all the various things you do with a cane. So it really changes how you use it from, you know, again, somebody who has a little bit of vision using a cane versus no sight at all.
Yeah, you're right. It's completely different, isn't it? Like going from the symbol cane to the guide cane. And then to the long cane, it's all a very different process.
And I think people, and it's something that I didn't really realize before I needed to start using a cane, because I was like, I'm not blind, I don't need a cane. And of course, there's nothing wrong with being blind or having a cane, but it's kind of this reflex of saying, you know, I don't define myself like this, I don't need this. There are actually so many nuances and differences along the spectrum. And I think that's important for people to realize.
Like it's so interesting that you mentioned the spectrum of partial sightedness to blindness. Like I've just snuck over the threshold for being registered blind. But like, you know, and we mentioned earlier, like completely invisible disabilities. Like I could have a cane if I wanted to, but I don't feel that I need it. It might make certain things easier. Like I've been in situations where, say, getting a ticket for something and said, oh, can I have a disabled ticket, please? Oh, what's the disability? Oh, I'm registered blind. And they kind of look you up and down and you just go, ah, okay, I'll believe you. So like things like that, the spectrum of it is so wide and so varied, and even within partially sighted and within blind, that's a spectrum in and to itself, and it can be quite difficult to navigate where you are on that, I think, at times.
When you face challenges like that, have you had to gain confidence in kind of self-advocacy or feeling confident enough to request the things you need to support you to live your life?
It comes with trial and error, a lot of it. Like you just kind of, I've got a copy of my blind certificate with me at all times. So like if anybody does challenge it in a situation like that, then I've got it on me. But at least in my experience, the vast majority of people are just gonna just believe me rather than deal with the uncomfortableness of it. Yeah, it can be quite difficult when it's challenged. I can kind of understand why, because it's not obvious, but it's a difficult one.
But I think, David, it can be challenged even just, like I was on Radio Manchester the other week talking about disability hate crime, and they called me up and said, will you get on and talk about this? I said, look, there's a lot I can't even say on the BBC about what's happened in bars over the years, because even though I've got no sight, I've worked very, very hard at looking at people in their eye, and where's the voice, looking at them in the face. And you get, to be quite honest, a certain demographic of man that just says, oh, you're not really blind, are you, mate? You just claim it, you know, all that stuff. And you have to sort of hold your ground. Now, I'm a guide dog user now, and that does not happen since having a dog. But with the cane, you would get that abuse in the bars because they've had a few beers, whatever, and they're confident, going, oh, you're one of them, aren't you, mate? You're taking the mick. And that's, I do retaliate to that, because I often think of the person who doesn't have my confidence, who has spent that time to put a nice shirt on, a good fragrance, go out, and then they have that happen to them. And I've known this, you know, people just go back and don't really want to go out again. They get shattered by these morons, really.
I had that a lot prior to the cane, where people are like, oh, but why don't you wear glasses, or why don't you, you know, whatever, whatever. And, you know, so I try to always take the time to explain to people, because I think, you know, it's important to raise awareness. But I think that's also one of the reasons why I got a cane, because showing people I have a cane to quote unquote prove it, you know, has also helped me and my confidence, almost as if it kind of legitimized what I have. And it's crazy that we need to do that in order to, you know, be believed. But I do always, you know, try to take the opportunity to have conversations with people and explain it to them. One thing that bothers me almost even more is when people say, oh, but you shouldn't refer to yourself as disabled. I mean, I don't see you as disabled, you know, you're... And I'm like, yeah, that's slightly condescending, because I do have a disability, and it's okay to share that and talk about it. And so there's always this need to kind of cloak things and hide things and not disclose things. And I always put it out in the open and say, yep, I have a disability, I have a cane. So what? Like, I love my life. I'm super happy. It does not mean that you're miserable and that your life is miserable. And I think that's where the narrative really needs to change.
When I didn't use a cane, you know, people didn't see me as visually impaired, even though I was being sight guided by, say, my parents, family, friends. I remember going to Thorpe Park once with family. We went to ask for the fast track passes. This was pre-COVID, so it was slightly different, because, you know, I had a cousin who's autistic, and so we both went. And when I went to ask at the desk, they said, oh, what is your disability? And, you know, I was, what, 15 at the time, and I, again, still naive and didn't know what to say. But now when I think of it, I was like, I should have kind of said a bit, added a bit more sass and, like, look at my eyes, like, I have a vision impairment. And, you know, they asked for proof, and I didn't have any sort of form of proof with me, and they didn't give me the pass. But if I had gone with a cane, and now that I use a cane, people are more aware and willing to help. We've had instances in shops where people have offered to help pack our shopping. You know, I've had instances where rides have been stopped so that I can get on. Having a cane versus not having a cane really changes the perception of people's attitudes in all public domains.
What areas of your lives, kind of all four of you at the moment, are you working on building your confidence in, and what are some of the strategies you're using to do that?
For me now, it's actually getting a second disability. I've been hospitalised 4 times last year with flare-ups and a blood clot with inflammatory bowel disease, otherwise known as Crohn's colitis. And getting that, which again, as you were saying, Vanessa, is a invisible disability to people. They don't see it. But just managing this, navigating it. I'm now on my third medication. And these biologics they give you, because I kept failing, this one seems to be starting to work. But you end up with extreme fatigue. You can have massive accidents in the street, which is completely traumatic when you're going along with the dog, and you can't help it. And for a guy who was always fit and strong, and I've never had any kind of chronic fatigue stuff or anything like that, to go from that to this and managing that with no sight has been really difficult. But I just feel blessed for the parenting I had, the confidence that was built into my soul and into me that has helped me navigate this. And also just the beauty of the modern technology, you know, having Crohn's Colitis UK there, you can call them, there's a great website, all these things that you can help yourself with. But yeah, it is one of the biggest challenges I've ever had to face, to be honest.
Yeah, that sounds really challenging. How about you, Berenice?
One thing that I'm working through right now is dating. You know, I'm currently single, and I think that since I started using the cane, you know, I have this idea in my head. I'm like, oh, you know, can men see past the cane, or do they just see the cane and the disability? And so I think that that's one area of my confidence that I'm currently working through that's linked to my cane.
Yeah, dating's really difficult. It is when you, with sight loss, because it throws up so much things, especially in the modern world of internet dating. It is such a visual world. and all the swipe stuff. It's not designed for us at all. And people do judge visually more than ever now, I think. I've had a couple of experiences, and I've tried it two ways in my life. With you know, I've put most of the girls at dancing and stuff, to be honest, just, you know, being yourself and enjoy yourself. But when I have used dating sites in the past, I've only done it twice, and I did it in both ways. Once putting my site up front, and once hiding it, just to see the difference. Yeah, when you're up front, you get no kickback from anywhere. But when you don't put it up, I got loads and loads of inquiries. When they dug into it and saw, they didn't contact me. It is just particularly difficult for people with vision impairments, I think.
I think one of my big areas at the moment, you know, this is my third year at university now, and I think one of my big areas of confidence is trying to speak up for myself when my needs aren't being met, or when I'm encountering some, you know, unpleasantness from people. You know, I have been scarred by it, and I do kind of feel like, you know, sometimes I should just curl up in a ball and not do anything about it. But then again, if you know, as I say, if you don't ask, you don't get. And I think, again, when you're in that university environment, I've spoken about this before, it's very much exposes you to the realities of the world, you know, from being in a school environment where people are helping you meet your needs, you can go to designated people and they can do the talking for you. And in a university environment, you have that to some degree, but a lot of it, it's you and what you want and just kind of voicing it. And sometimes it does feel like you're in a position of a robot. I'm just repeating myself. But ultimately, you have to do that, you know, using different strategies, you know, whether that's emailing somebody ahead, or, you know, just saying like, can I meet you beforehand so that we can get an understanding of each other? Or, you know, just kind of just topping up and making sure that people are aware of things. There's different ways of approaching it, to be honest.
I think for me is just kind of like openly talking about it. Like, I don't talk about my blindness an awful lot. I think that's because, you know, I spend, you know, all day every day working with fellow blind and partially sighted people, and I feel that I'm kind of I'm the least blind person that you'll find. So I think finding a way to, you know, talk about it rather than kind of feeling like I've got imposter syndrome all the time is, yeah, kind of what I'm trying to work on at the moment.
In my case, I feel like I've done a lot of work on myself over the past two decades since my diagnosis, whether it's through therapy or meditation or spirituality, and to try and really find kind of that inner peace. I think something I often say is the more my external vision diminishes, the more my internal vision expands. And so that's something that's tremendously helped me. And also learning to tap into my other senses, smell, touch, hearing, taste. And so I think kind of honing in on that can really boost your confidence. And I think that what I'm working on right now is more kind of trying to shift the perspective and narrative around disabilities as a whole through my work as a writer and an advocate. And I think because we live in a society that views, you know, any kind of disability, you know, in such sort of restrained manner, associating it with viewing disabled people as patients, and everything around it is medicalized or functional or, you know, sterile. And I think, you know, let's shake things up and actually show a different side of disabilities and how incredibly powerful, resilient, entrepreneurial, creative people with disabilities are, starting new conversations through fashion, beauty, art, design, culture. That's kind of the work that I'm doing right now to also help boost the confidence of other people with different disabilities.
And what is one quick confidence fix or small action that you do to boost your confidence during the day-to-day?
Hair, I think for me, when I learned how to straighten my hair, I got one of those straightener brushes for my 13th birthday, I remember, and just building my confidence in being near a hot item, using it. And then when I turned 16, I challenged myself and said, okay, I'm going to use a pair of proper straighteners. And, you know, now I can kind of do it, not to brag or anything, but sort of like, you know, perfectly. And people often ask me, did somebody do that for you? I'm like, no. And often people ask me, oh, do you not burn yourself? And I'm like, yes, I do, like some people do. But again, it's something that I like to take a risk, and it makes me, you know, feel good that I've done something that anybody really can find kind of traumatizing because of using a straightener or hairdryer or curling iron, whatever.
Oh, again, but it's about to dance. If a tune comes on the radio, just get up on your toes and dance around your kitchen and just get back into the moment. I used to teach Qigong, which is the sort of therapeutic form of Tai Chi. And I'd say to people, you know, when you can't meditate, and especially like with having Charles Bonnet syndrome, so it's really difficult. So this is great because you're connecting it to movement is within Tai Chi and Qigong. Well, dancing's the same. If you're in the moment, you're meditating. So I say to anybody, if you're really down, just put the music on your light. You don't need to be a great dancer, be absolute garbage. It doesn't matter. Jump out of time. Just be yourself in that moment.
Sticking with the music theme, like, you know, as I've said before, I'm not much of a dancer, but I am a very aggressive head nodder when music I like comes on. So that's, yeah, a great tune. Can really lift your mood and your confidence as well. Kind of ties into the fashion thing as well. I do enjoy going to the gym. Not the best at it in the world, but it is a great feeling, particularly once you've done it. And fashion-wise, I've got a large collection of horrible, horrible football shirts that I wear to the gym. So I'm extremely vibrant when I'm there, which is fun too.
I mean, you know, it may sound superficial, but to be honest, like, I've always loved fashion. And so I think for me, you know, getting dressed up and sort of also matching my outfit with my different canes, applying makeup is actually a pretty big confidence booster for me because I have, you know, more and more blind spots in my vision. I've learned to apply eye makeup with both my eyes closed because I can really just feel the makeup. And again, not to brag, but then, you know, a lot of girlfriends are like, my God, like, you apply makeup better than I do and it looks amazing. And I'm like, yeah, thanks. That's definitely confidence booster.
I wouldn't say it's superficial in any way at all. I think it's great, you know, honestly, because I'm the same. You know, people say to me, God, how are you so coordinating? I say, well, first of all, I used to be partially sighted, so I remember all colours. And so the other side as a blind man is to just don't overcook it with the colours or something, you know. You know, it's always that, just combine and get things that will work together. And it's great. And I'm really into fragrances as well, a lot of the sort of like niche stuff and things like that. And just, I always say, you know, even when you feel like crap, you can always smell good. It's just the same with the clothing. I'm not like a sharp dresser as in like suits. It's more smart casual for me, all that sort of stuff. But it's important. It does bring you up massively. And also it challenges people's perception of blindness, that they expect we're going to have odd socks and all of that.
And finally, what advice would you give to other blind and partially sighted people who are wanting to boost their confidence?
I always say to people, even if you go to that Pilates class or any of that sort of stuff and you get that negative response, as tough as that is, please remember that's one individual. It's just one person who's got a perception of you, and that's on them. And yes, you can go through a protocol to get into that class, but you might feel a bit like, no, I don't want to do it. So just switch your class and go again. And you've really got to get the resilience inside yourself as a blind or partially sighted person to keep going back out. Because please remember, most people are okay.
I think writing or even speaking, opening a voice memo on your phone and just really, you know, speak out your thoughts, feelings, emotions, you know, on anything, even if it's something someone said to you or something that you're feeling. Because again, you know, having those emotions and thoughts bottled up, that they can drive you sort of crazy, and it's a healthier way of doing it, especially if you find it difficult to speak to another person. It just makes you feel sort of lighter inside. And again, you know, if you are somebody who loves that, you know, writing or performing, it's a creative way, you know, you can kind of come up with stories with fictional characters and maybe make them think and feel things that you're feeling yourself. And again, that's something, you know, it will teach your audience.
Find something that you're passionate about, because to be honest, this is something that really helped me tremendously. I mean, I've writing has always been a passion of mine. So, you know, from high school, I loved writing essays, and then I went into journalism. Yeah, it's always helped me make sense of the world and of the things to write. And I think that 2 years ago when I needed to start using a cane, there was this massive shift that happened. And I've been just really channeling my writing into my advocacy for disabilities. It's something that gives me so much drive every day that I'm so excited to work on. And I meet so many incredible people through that.
Kind of piggybacking off what Sean was saying, is like, it's, if somebody's going to be rude to you, it's just one person. When I was at university, one of my lecturers said, when we were going out doing Vox Pop, he said, just go up and speak to people. Like, people aren't going to be rude to you the vast majority of the time. And it does take an awful lot to take that first step to go and do something. But yeah, I think realizing that the vast majority of people aren't going to be rude to you. Like, most people are fine and will help you if they can.
Well, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio for our Confidence Roundtable.